With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore now with Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith. And Chief, hell of a way to start the new year.
Yeah, it's, unfortunately, a busy day for everybody in public safety and a tough day for the community and everybody that's dealing with the weather and trying to go about their daily routine and some folks having a pretty significant amount of interference in that process, if you will.
I wonder if we could start today and go backwards. Safety issues for right now, because it looks to me, driving through Gloucester, that the DPW has done an amazing job. That's not the fire alarm, by the way. Clearing the roads in Gloucester. So maybe talk public safety today, and then we'll go backwards.
Yeah. So for today, it's for the most part, it's folks staying off the roads until the parking ban is lifted, which I think is coming up here soon. Obviously, city offices are closed to not put any of our non-essential employees, public safety employees, in harm's way, and also to help keep the traffic volume and the car volumes and parking and so forth to a minimum. I mean, it's just makes logistical sense to not do those things, obviously. And if we're asking the public to stay off the road, then that's going to include the city employees and everybody else. So for us, it's a matter of going around and doing assessments on the community as a whole, and obviously anything that is publicly owned, publicly managed, and publicly used, to see what kind of damage has been done to these properties. Obviously, anything that we see that's privately owned and damages there, then we're relating that to the owners of those properties, businesses, what have you. So there's a pretty it'll be an ongoing effort for a while, and obviously we're advising everybody that owns a home, owns property, owns a business, that when it's safe and you're able to do so, to certainly assess your property for damages that weren't there prior to the storm, so you can get your personal claims going. The city's in the same position as everyone else, dependent, like we've seen in the past, if this storm rises to the level of a federal declaration for disaster and relief in that regard for funding from the feds that would reimburse the city and the community for losses, that's a big part of what we're doing since the storm hit. We do it routinely every storm, keeping detailed records of every penny of tax dollars that are spent, every bit of damage that occurs that we have to remediate right away, that's related to the storm and storm preparation and those things that qualify under FEMA's standards. And those change a little bit, so it's it's really kind of an accounting task more than anything on the money side. But the safety side, I think the message got out there really well. Our new RAVE system has worked exactly the way we had hoped and expected. And, we've kind of worked out how the new software works in relation to the old stuff. And, it's pushing out that consistent message to all platforms of social media in the city for the most part, between City Hall, Fire, the DPW, the city's website itself. So it's the same message, goes out on text in a truncated fashion to give you just the bare essentials of what you need to know, because a text is a short message, obviously. The email is the full message. The voice portion of it that goes out is, again, a bit of a modification, so we minimize duplication of what is being stated. We've kind of cleaned that process up to where, the mayor doesn't get stuck trying to re-record a message in the middle of a storm, perhaps, when we have to extend it like we did yesterday. So there is that introductory message that is the mayor's pre-recorded audio saying, yes, this is the mayor and this is an authentic message, because we don't want to use the robo voice, if you will.
Yeah, that was interesting yesterday.
Yeah, the robo voice does a great job. It's pretty clear. It works out pretty well. I haven't had any complaints about it. But if you put that out in and of itself, by itself, there is a degree of suspicion as to the authenticity, mm-hmm. given the number of calls we all get in our homes from these systems that are really looking to get in everybody's pocket. So, I mean, the legitimacy of these things is suspect. So when we put it out, you're always going to hear that introductory statement from the mayor saying, this is the city, this is an authentic message, please listen to what follows, and then you get the approved messaging that comes out from city administration.
This storm is complicated by a couple of things, because of the flooding, obviously, the intensity of the wind, but also the cold that's about to come. And what are fire concerns, Chief, for the safety, for homeowners' safety? I know I went out and shoveled yesterday, and I have a vent that's outside the house, and I presume it's got something to do with the heater, and it was covered with snow, so I cleared that away right away. But, I mean, you know, these portable heaters and vents covered. Well, what are some of the concerns?
Yeah, so the standard things, like we talked about at the beginning of the heating season, still apply, and even more so, if you will, during these kind of storms, especially with the winds that we're getting. And it is a light snow, so it's drifting. So it does have the ability and propensity for many places to drift right up against where we don't want it to be, which is your exhaust vents for your gas-fired equipment. So, you know, homeowners need to really pay attention to those things around their home. So obviously, clearing your sidewalks, clearing your hydrants, but you absolutely have to look and pay attention that your exhaust venting for any of your gas-fired, oil-fired, combustible equipment in your home, whether that's a generator outside, you happen to be on generator power, which we're extremely thankful right now that we didn't lose all that much power considering the storm, and National Grid did a fabulous job restoring what was lost. So we're extremely thankful for the response from them. They did an outstanding job. But yeah, back to your point, safety in your homes, whether you own it, rent it, are just staying there, a business, all of the above need to pay attention for exhaust vents not being plugged or covered so we're not getting the backup of carbon monoxide. Everyone should have carbon monoxide detection in their homes. If the home has been sold within the last decade, it's required. If it hasn't been sold, you should have it. It's common sense. I mean, we can't preach and profess this loudly and strongly enough that you need to have carbon monoxide detection in your home if you have any kind of combustible heating, which is almost all of us. There's very few people that don't have any sort of combustion heating their water, heating their home, cooking food. There's something in the home that is, you know, burning a flame and can produce carbon monoxide. So we really stress to have those in the home. Portable heaters, space heaters in your homes. Unfortunately, this time of the year, especially with some of the old construction and heating systems that we have in our homes in New England, they become almost a necessity. You know, we really, really recommend you purchase something that is as safe as possible for the given space that you're trying to heat. You have to give that device the adequate clearance that the manufacturer recommends, and we always recommend at least 3 feet around anything that's a heating object. If people have candles that they're using for lighting because they've lost power, then you need to give that candle serious respect and clear any combustibles in a 3-foot radius from around it. You know, it seems like a simple thing, but when you walk out of a room and forget a candle and it burns down to the level that, you know, it's no longer contained, and you have paperwork sitting there, one thing can lead to another. So
a lot of the new space heaters are extremely safe. They don't have that electric element anymore. They have some other way of pushing out hot air, and if you tip them over, they shut off immediately. So there's a lot of good safety small little portable heaters you can get.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, with obviously liquid-fired heaters are illegal in the state, period, so those shouldn't ever be used because they're not legal and legitimate for sale or for use in the state. So the heaters that are out there, the new ones, you know, you got the quartz technology, and like the one in my office is looks like a radiator. It's an oil-filled system. It runs off electricity. But like anything, if you overload a circuit, if you're rolling over top of that cord, you're pigtailing extension cord after extension cord, those things create problems that the heater may have been safe, but your way of plugging it in and operating it, and or failing to maintain the cords and the systems can lead to fires and or even just an electrical hazard. You know, somebody, you know, getting on the cord, wet boots, wet shoes, coming in and out shoveling. You just got to pay attention. So
I don't want you to look behind my My TV console, this is not going to be a lot. Chief, yesterday, if we can turn attention to Thursday now, and I know it's a very busy time for you guys still here on Friday, but an amazing day in terms of actual rescues. You had to rescue people from dangerous situations. Your men, the police department, had to coordinate and were put in some very stressful situations. So maybe a quick recap on what happened yesterday.
Yeah, the two most significant events in that regard happened over at Beacon Marine, where the water was coming up. We all know the building and where it's positioned, and a gentleman kind of had to retreat to his bathtub to stay out of the cold water until he could get pulled out of that building. So you know, it's definitely difficult for folks that if you wake up or open the wrong door and water starts flowing in, none of us want to get soaking wet in this kind of weather and this cold. And so the first reaction is to retreat from it. Sometimes that puts you in a worse spot than if you were to just try to immediately exit. So folks that live anywhere near the water or in those situations, whether they're visiting, living, what have you, you really need to plan ahead and consider what happens if, what will I do if, no different than what we do and what we recommend for planning for a fire in that structure. You know, you got smoke detectors that are supposed to wake you up, and you're supposed to have an exit plan that gives you two ways out of every room if a door, a window, whatever's available for you to make egress from that. So, you know, if you live near the water, over the water, in the case of...
Is this up on stilts? Is that where this was?
Yeah, Beacon Marine. So it's, you know, those are the things that, depending on where you live, and you gotta think that through. You know, if you live on a boat, you got life preservers and everything else at the immediate ready, and life rafts, and you know where those things are because that's where you live. Even if you're just out for the day, you need to know where those things are. So just pre-planning for self-preservation is really what folks need to focus on. Obviously, this event, it's a pretty significant flood. Everybody that I've talked to that's lived here their whole life has rarely seen this level of flooding along the river and even along the harbor. We had pretty significant high tide and storm surge yesterday that people need to understand the effects of that and how they have to plan and prepare for continuity of their life, whether it's a business, residence, all of the above. And, you know, take a look at the maps that are available online through FEMA for, you know, storm surge, hurricane inundation maps, and they're all readily available online. So it's you definitely need to know where you can go and where you can't.
Final question I have, Chief, with the new electrical equipment that there are in homes and so on, and the circuit breakers, there's much more safety factor built into water and so on. But with this flooding, it made me think twice about going into the basement. Is there still a problem with being in the basement where all your electrical stuff is?
So it depends obviously on your elevation and if you're getting flooding. I mean, you can get flooding from lots of different causes. In yesterday's situation, you're talking, you know, the rise of the tide and storm surge bringing the water above a level of containment and spilling into where we live and operate, and you know where there's freestanding electrical equipment, you know, over at the high school, a transformer outside, you know, that's providing energy to facilities in the area was, you know, inundated with water and flooded there. So you know, those are the things that everyone that talks about, you know, preparation for the future warns that we need to think through. Mm-hmm. And the same is true with our homes. I mean, if you plan on being there any length of time, you should seriously consider where does your electrical come into your home? Where are your panels located? Are you above that flood line or stage, given the predictions that are on the books now? Again, back to the FEMA maps that say, hey, with this type of storm, this is where the water levels might end up. And, you know, if you're building a new home or a new structure, as you'll note when you look around, the hotel, one being included, is kind of raised up on stilts. So that's a federal requirement, or you're not going to get a building permit. So it's definitely important. I mean, if you get flooding and you're in that situation and you're in a basement, you've got a few inches of water and it's rising and your panels are in harm's way, if your feet are in the puddle, turning off your power is probably not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Again, back to self-preservation. Let's not touch electricity while we're standing in water. So that's when you have to make those 911 calls. The problem is when we get this many at once,
right,
we're not going to get to everybody.
Right.
National Grid is the one that has to cut the power. They're not going to get to everybody quickly enough. So there's going to be a lot of recovery involved in the number of homes that have had the flooding to this degree and the impact that's on them. So the building inspectors out there today, obviously National Grid worked all day, all night, and they work with a lot of the homeowners to try to resolve this. A lot of it does fall back directly on the homeowner to sort this out with their insurance companies and private contractors to get restored.
And finally, in Gloucester, if a person has a question about safety, Chief, and a little hesitant maybe to call 911, especially today where it's a beautiful day out, there is a non-emergency number to call the fire department?
Yeah, if anybody's trying to get a hold of the fire department, you know, our business lines are still up and running as usual, and you can find those online, so that's the easiest way to track it down. Our old 2424 line is really intended to be a backup emergency line, if you will. Mm-hmm. It is considered one of our business lines, but it is an emergency line. So we encourage anybody that's got any kind of questions, you know, to seek out the answers through the best possible solution for them, which there's a ton of resources online, really, that answer those questions for you. And we've only got one person answering the phones on the desk, and they're not going to have all the answers that you need.
Okay.
and all the resources. And quite frankly, a lot of the questions we're going to get are going to go back directly to private enterprise to the great degree in your private home and contractors, and we just can't give out recommendations and advice on that kind of thing other than say, okay, you need to get an electrician to come out and look at that.
Okay.
So it's going to waste folks' time to call here to try to get specific help and information on that when it's non-emergent. It's
right.
Not something that we really engage in too deeply. So there are certainly lots of, you know, helpful guides and information, and we linked all of those on the city's webpage, that, you know, how to stay warm, how to take care of the house, all those sorts of things. So that's where I would direct people to go look. If they don't have access, they don't have internet access, then certainly calling the station is always, you know, one of those things that we're going to do what we can. And again, there's a limit to what kind of advice and recommendations we can give.
I will post those numbers on the website. Chief, thank you so much.
Outstanding. And I hope everybody stays safe. The weather's going to get bitterly cold. So, again, you know, be careful with the heating. You know, keep the house as tight as you can. And, you know, bad pipe design in homes. If you can open a closet, open a cupboard, and move some air with even a regular fan, people are like, well, why use a fan? It's moving warm air from one area to a colder area. So if you can open up a closet, open up a cupboard, and direct a fan from a warm area to that cold area, you may keep yourself from freezing a pipe or freezing it so badly that it cracks your pipe. And the water might not leak right away, but it'll leak when it thaws out again. So, again, just the common things that homeowners and business owners have to think about and do. We just like to remind everybody that, hey, don't forget about your plumbing. Go take a look at it. Make sure that it's not freezing up. Drip your faucets accordingly. And, you know, depending on the age and insulation of your home, this kind of weather is going to create problems for folks.
I got some work to do when I get home. That's Gloucester Fire Chief Eric Smith with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore.